You are like Lee to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seemed particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torturer match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group.
Welcome one and all to the Gru Cafe, a brand new NeedCoffee.com podcast by some of the fine people from NeedCoffee.com. Joining us today, we have me, Kim, and we also have Rocks of Spaz House.
Hello.
And Doc Ezra.
Hello there.
And we are here to talk about games, pretty much all kinds of games, because we like them, and that is a good thing. Or at least I've always
gaming
thought so.
It's a good thing.
Gaming's good for you, like Guinness.
That's right.
Gaming and Guinness, even better. It's the breakfast of champions. And by breakfast I mean a meal that you eat at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. What, am I the only one who does that?
No.
So since we're starting off a brand new podcast, we're going to give some little introductions about how we got into gaming, what we did when we were kids, what we do now, and what sorts of games we like to play. So let's start with Doc.
Oh, okay. Wow, where did I start? I started with a, I shit you not, some sort of Pong thing from Sears. back in the hazy days of early gaming. That was probably the first video game. And tabletop stuff I picked up at like 8 or 9. I'll play damn near anything. I'm not too picky. Never been any good at the fighting games, like, you know, Mortal Kombat's and Street Fighters and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But just about anything else, I tend to favor, you know, long drawn out, take me 100 hours to finish at RPGs. But shooting things in the face never hurts.
when it's really good, you can combine the two.
Yes. And that's Fallout 3.
I was just going to say Fallout 3 for the win.
What else am I supposed to tell them? That's
your history.
Yeah. Man, and what sorts of games, like what consoles or?
Oh wow! I actually didn't own my first console until I was in graduate school. I missed pretty much the entire 8-bit, and I guess 16-bit generation. I was a PC gamer exclusively before that. The first console I actually owned was the original PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
I had logged my share of time with friends, Segas and Nintendos and things like that over the years. But as far as one that I could just sit down and dump hundreds of hours of my free time into, a PlayStation, also bought at Sears. back when they sold that sort of thing.
Activision.
Woo. Yeah. So, like I said, before that it was all PC stuff. I'm pretty much waiting for somebody to match the heights of some of those early games, though I'm sure nostalgia's got a part to play in that. I still don't think anybody's outdone XCOM. And I don't think anybody's made a better RPG than Planescape Torment. So I'll pass the hat to somebody else, because that's pretty much me.
Rox?
Okay. This will be a while. My brother brought home we always game. There's nothing I will not play within reason. We always had games in the house, but my brother brought home one of the original box sets of D&D when it first came out. Box set with the ugly dice and everything. And we played at our house, and we play, you know, my brothers would bring over some of their friends, and we played D&D for a long time. And then once I got into, that was sort of on the cusp of high school. Then I found other people. We would sometimes we'd play at lunch, you know, the nerds at the table, or find some hallway to play D&D.
How'd you fit it into a lunch break? Every time I've played it, takes hours.
Okay, well, here's the early days. The early days, nobody really role played. It was, okay, you're walking down the hall, go down, you know, you use your graph paper.
Yeah.
You know, okay, you were walking down a hall, down 1, 2, 3, 4 squares. It makes a right. You know, so it's almost like you're, you know, the DM is shuttling you through just a monster quest.
Right.
So you could get, you know, lunch was an hour, I think. So you can get some time in. So did that, and then I kind of dropped out of electronic gaming. I'll get into later, because our friends had the Activisions and stuff, and we were too busy doing outside stuff. We were an outside family. You know, we played outside all the time. So we really, my mom's like, should we get a computer? And this is like during, okay, Doc, you know this, the Sinclair days, when Texas Instrument had the Sinclair.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And it's like, no, we don't need that. It won't be played with. I think I took like a long hiatus from gaming, except for backgammon and whatnot, until I got back into it, because then I started playing golf and tennis and stuff. Until I ran across a game store when I moved down to Jacksonville, and that was like mid-90s or so, or early 90s. And I got hooked onto Magic the Gathering, the card game. I love that game. Still love it. Can't play really well, but I love doing multiplayer games. From there, I got back into gaming, and has taken on a really strong, really, you know, we're always gaming at least once a week. And my big thing is doing tabletop role playing. I have done LARP. The card games I like, even though that has been on the waning. I won several tournaments for Illuminati, coming in first. Same thing with Netrunner. I was actually a Wizards of the Coast sysop for the game Netrunner, and I ran games and tournaments in through Jacksonville and St. Augustine and Gainesville, you know, when that game came out. I was also... We had a short stint with a gaming group association. I was president of that for a while, until the one guy that kind of brought it up and sort of threw me in as president. I wanted to do it as one way of, you know, just a loose group where people can find other gamers, and they wanted to do charitable works. They were trying to do too much. But anyway.
Wait, how can you play games for charity?
Was it
a walkathon, or was it like a D&D-a-thon?
No, you can actually have tournaments.
Okay,
$10 to enter into. It could have been anything. There's tournaments all over the place. You could have a Warhammer tournament. You can have an Epic tournament. You could have a Magic tournament. You know, donate $5. Here's our, you know, and you get your prizes.
Yeah.
And whatever you earn for your tournament would go to whatever charity you think of. But
oh, I see.
That was kind of, I wasn't thinking that. I just wanted people to join.
Yeah.
And they were already jumping in on, we could do this for charity. I'm like, we need people first. Anyway, I started playing Call of Cthulhu, which is a main RPG for me. GURPS, which is a Steve Jackson's generic universal playing system. What else? Castle Falkenstein. That is like the precursor to the steampunk thing. That's a fun game.
So you're big into the tabletop. What do you do as far as computer or video games?
Okay. I got into game. Let's see, electronic. Kind of funny. I picked up a Super NES at a toy show for $40, and he had a ton of games. Well, I cashed in a lot of the games and stuff for some really good games. And then when the PlayStation came out, I was able to trade in my Super NES that I got for $40 to get a PlayStation. And then I did the same thing with this PlayStation to get a PlayStation 2.
You sound like my brother. He was always doing that when we were kids. Like he'd swap in his system and a bunch of games to somebody for another system. And I never could figure out who he was convincing to do this, but he kept coming home with different stuff that he would swap
for
at school.
For a while, the game stores, it was beneficial for both parties. I will not do it now. But there was a time when you can actually trade in stuff and actually get something out of it. Now you go to...
It's hard now.
Say, it's really hard now.
They won't
so
give
it's
you
like
much.
If you're going to buy a game, you better keep it because it's not going to... You know, you're not going to get any money back on it, even though the one company will. But my idea is buy a new game because you're benefiting the actual creators of the game and not the secondary market. That's the way I see it. Anyway, so I swapped out all my game systems. So right now I just still have my PlayStation 2. And I have, like... At least one, two. I have three different models of the Game Boy system.
The DS?
Mm-hmm. I have a DSi, I have a Game Boy Pocket, and I still have my gray brick one.
Oh, wow, the old school one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I keep my Game Boy Pocket because I still play Kirby Block Ball and Kirby Pinball and... couple other games that, you know, they're still the square cartridges and I have not moved on from them. And I love those games because they're simple. You just pick them up, play them. And I like the Game Boy Pocket because that had the attachment for the camera. So I still use that. So I like my DSi. That's what I play the most out of. And I will add the iTouch and the iPad to the current roster as well, even though I play a lot more on the iTouch more so. I just picked up several games which we can talk about later. As far as the type of genre for electronic games, even though I'm not really a driver, I love driving games.
So do you like the ones where you're supposed to crash or the ones where you're supposed to actually stay on the road?
Down the road, even though I played a couple of the crashing ones, those are fun.
Toughly likes those, the Burnout games, and
yeah,
I
love Burnout. I have
those
all
are the ones I'll play because it's so much fun to do the mode where you're supposed to crash as spectacularly as possible.
Yeah, I love the Burnout games, yeah. And those are ones I haven't swapped out. There is a game for the iTouch that's a simulation of that, but it's not, it doesn't have the graphics like the Burnouts because the worlds are so cool.
Yeah, I've found that as far as like the iPhone iTouch games, that the ones that are purpose made for that tend to be better than the ones that are ports. Because you have to really, I think, code it in a different way and have a different sort of eye. Although there have been some ports that have been successful.
Yeah.
All right, well, so I'm probably a little bit unique in that I actually got into video games because of my dad, because he had an Atari 2600 that he used to play. And
wow.
I remember being really little and just watching fascinated while he played, you know, Frogger and all this. And we had these games, and the house we lived in, I know that I was younger than 7 when I started playing with my dad's Atari, and I was terrible at everything I tried. Like Pitfall. Did you ever play Pitfall?
Yeah.
Where you have to stand on the eyes of the alligator, otherwise they'll eat you. And it never ends. I didn't realize that. But you just keep going and going mm-hmm. and going and going. So we had a bunch of games for the Atari that we played. And then my dad actually saw the original NES and was interested in it. And he's like, so kids, do you think you would play this? And we're like, yeah. So he picked up the original NES system and we had Tetris was what we started with and like Punch Out. Back when it was Mike Tyson's Punch Out before Mike Tyson got into his troubles and was no longer an appropriate, you know, spokesmodel for a children's game. But so we played those and that quickly grew to be the thing that my brother and I did together, especially on school holidays, is my dad would be like, okay, what game do you want for the Christmas holiday? And he would go rent it for us at the video store and we would play it all week and be out of everybody's hair. Go in the room and play, you know, so we would play, it would be either things that we could play together. Like there was, you remember River City Ransom, which was a 2-player simultaneous game where you were both on the screen at the same time.
So the one where you're wandering around just beating the crap out of people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
like a Double Dragon or
It's very similar to Double Dragon, but we had that, we played. And then the other thing we would do is we would get like RPGs or games like Zelda that are sort of RPG-ish. And I liked to go around in the towns and shop and talk to people. And so my brother would play the dungeon. And then when it was time to go to town, he'd give it to me and I'd go do all the side quest stuff because he got bored with that. Sometimes if it was a longer game, like he'd just watch me play and offer like advice. He's like, okay, you need to use freeze spells on that guy because he's using fire. I'm like, oh yeah, okay, you know. So we would actually kind of multiplayer simultaneously games that weren't meant to be played that way. We just sort of team up or switch back and forth. And of course we played a lot of Mario 3 we spent a lot of time on.
That's pretty good considering most families have a timer of how long a child could play a certain game. My sister had to do that with her boys.
Yeah. Some of them we would have to go back and forth with, but we actually spent a lot of time kind of doing it together. And we would just be in there for hours and hours and hours, you know, in the summertime. So dad would get something that was like, you know, a lengthy game. I remember we played, what was that game with the yo-yo? Like, you hopped and you had a yo-yo and you were on island Star Tropics, I think it was called. We spent a lot of time playing that one. But then we moved up to the Super Nintendo. We became a Nintendo family from that. And we moved up to the Super Nintendo system, which there were a lot of games on Super Nintendo that I really loved. And that's when I first started getting into RPGs, because we had two in particular that we were really, really fond of. And it was Earthbound and Chrono Trigger. Were the two. And we actually had we would usually rent them. Yeah, we'd rent it for a week or 2 weeks. And because I think they had a weekly thing at the video store. And just loved the games. They still hold up. I remember they re-released Chrono Trigger for the DS recently. And I played it again. And I just enjoyed it just as much as I had. It just was really well designed and really fun. But that actually, I wanted a copy of it, but it was out of print. And it was really hard to find because some of those old Nintendo games would be really hard to find once they would go out of print. And my dad actually for Christmas one year went around town until he found a video store that had a copy, and he basically like bribed them into selling it to him.
Give
it to me for Christmas.
That was like one of the weird things about like even the early days of PlayStation. You hear about a game and nobody has it because it's so obscure. I had that problem with the Terry Pratchett Discworld games of, you know, trying to find a copy.
Yeah. Well, and we got my brother got Nintendo Power for his birthday every year, the little Nintendo magazine. So we read up on all the news, you know, and get the cheats and the different reviews and stuff. And so we did that for a long time. And then eventually he traded up to like a 64, but I never really liked that one much. And I think around that time I went to college a little after that. So around then I ended up getting a PlayStation and getting into a lot of the PlayStation games and the RPGs there. And I became a pretty exclusive RPG person on those for a long time with the PlayStation games and the Final Fantasies, of course. And there was also this series, I'm blanking on what it was called. It was the one where you had to kind of like you had to defeat demons to get their powers, and there were a couple of sequels. It was kind of a little creepier.
Shadow Hearts.
Yes, Shadow Hearts. So I played those and really liked them. I thought those were fun. I never did finish the third one though. It started getting kind of cheesy.
Second one was probably the last one worth playing. The third one was pretty lame.
Yeah, I was like, oh, there's another Shadow Hearts, and then I got it. I'm like, oh goodness. And the whole cutscene where her like boob band comes undone and you see the lovingly rendered bounce, and I'm just like, okay, is this really necessary? Come on. I mean, as a woman who plays video games, you know, I have to just accept the fact that a lot of them are really not meant for me, but some of them are even worse than the norm. But so I was a PlayStation person for the PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2, and I had stayed on that for a long time. And then we got an Xbox. Actually, this is how geeky we are. We actually got an Xbox as like a wedding present.
Nice. Wow.
And it's because
forget the silverware.
I know. Xbox. So we had like the weekend we got married, we like stayed and played Xbox, and it was great. Fun. So I actually started branching out some with that and learning some other styles.
Now, you did write up a while ago when you got into actual tabletop role playing.
Yes, that's actually very recent. That's just in the last year, because I had a very sheltered childhood, and I didn't know anybody who played tabletop role playing. And there was in the small southern town where I grew up, it was widely regarded as being a somewhat dodgy pastime.
It still is.
So I had just never gotten into it. And so the more I now have friends who play, and I'm like, that sounds like it would be fun. You know, and I wrote a column for the site where I was like, I tried to get into it, and there was all these books, and I didn't know what I was talking about. But I finally, it was this whole epic drama, because I was like, okay, I want to play. So I went to the game store one day, and they had a thing and played, but Mike didn't like playing in the game store, because there's people going in and out, and it's kind of, you know, you don't know them. And so we were like, well, we'll find something else. And so I got like a meetup for the area D&D group and found someone. He's like, oh, well, I'm gonna do something with my stepdaughter and she's new, so we can do something. So I went over there, and that just didn't work out very well, because most of the time, like, the dad and the stepdaughter were bickering.
Oh.
And we were just kind of like, okay, this is awkward.
It's yeah, we'll have to have a chapter on how to find a good gaming group.
But so then what I finally did was just harassed one of my friends. I had this friend I worked with, and I'm like, you've played, haven't you? He's like, yeah. I'm like, you could run a game, couldn't you? He's like, maybe. I've never done it, but I could buy the books and stuff. I'm like, do that. And then we could all go to your house and play, and you can invite all your other friends. We could have a group. So after about 3 months of this, he finally did. So we've actually been playing with him. And actually, Lee's husband is in our group as well. And her son comes and plays. So we've actually got a group that we go to regularly now, and it's been a lot of fun. And I actually have started running games for my brother and my sister occasionally when I'm home for like a holiday, and they've taken to it as well. Although I have to watch out for my brother, because he's the one who, if I've come up with some situation, will think of something to do that I never occurred to me that you would do. You know,
oh, there's always one.
Yeah. So I'm like, so there's this statue, and da 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 da. He's like, can I climb the statue? Like,
I can tell you stories.
Sure.
I have thwarted, you know, like, any game master.
Like, there's runes on the wall. He's like, I take the scrap of paper that I found on the floor and a stick of charcoal from my torch and make a rubbing of the runes in case I need it later. And I'm like, that's very clever. You're not gonna. So now whenever he comes up with something like that, I pretend that I had thought of that all along and, you know, try to think of something on the fly to put in. You know?
Oh, yes.
You know, let him find an extra potion or, you know, get a buff or something. But
now, how old's your brother and sister that you play?
My brother is 3 years younger than me, and my sister's 8 years younger than me. So she's in her early 20s, he's in his late 20s.
Oh, okay. So I know, like, every time I meet up with, like, my brother Ted, he will game. You know, if he stops by in my area, I'll make sure I find a gaming group so he can game.
And it's funny because when I was a kid, like, I was always rounding up all the neighbor children and, like, meeting them on quests and all this stuff. But, you know, we didn't have any formal thing. I'm like, okay, now. My mom would always make me play with the little kids. I'm like, okay, you're the servant, and you're the knight who has to carry our basket. And we're the princesses, and we're going to go off in the woods.
Wow. Can you say NPC?
Exactly.
You're the NPC. What's that? Oh, it doesn't matter.
We used to play, like, Chronicles of Narnia, and I'm like, I get to be Lucy. You can be whoever you want.
Because Lucy had the bow, right? No.
She had she had the bottle of heal-all potions.
Oh, well, I would have gone for the other.
Susan had the bow. Yeah, well, when I was older, I liked her. But when I was littler, I liked Lucy because she was, like, the hero.
All right.
But talking, what you're saying about tournaments made me remember a story. My brother used to play this game, Rage.
Mm-hmm.
It was something about dinosaurs or werewolves or something.
Oh,
I don't know. I never played.
Oh, no. There's Dino Age.
It was called Rage. But there was a picture of some snarly looking animal on the cover. I never played it.
That was White Wolf's.
Yeah.
It was a card werewolf card game.
Yeah, it was a card game. Oh. And he played it, like, there was this one other kid at school who played it with him, and they were the only two people they knew who played. So he found out, he was too young to drive, because I think he had to get my mom to take him to this. So he found out that there was a tournament at, like, the Sheraton, you know, downtown. And so he convinced my mother to, like, take him and, you know, pay the $10 or whatever to go play this tournament. And he says he had this terrible deck. He had, like, one good card, which was, like, you know, skip your turn and move on to the next person. And, you know, one that was some sort of reflect, you know. And so he said he actually made it to second place in the tournament.
Wow.
Because he would just skip his turn and it would go on. And all the other players would kill each other off.
Yep. He's if it's multiplayer.
You know, he's this little, you know, middle school kid. He's like, they were all giving me the evil eye. So he ended up winning, like, an uncut sheet of cards, which meant absolutely nothing to him. He's like, okay, when am I going to do this? And one of the other, like, this is like a 30-year-old man who's in this. He's like, can I buy those from you? And my brother's like, score!
Oh, yeah.
So he got, like, you know, $100 for this thing. He's like, this was the best day ever!
Doc, but, yeah, Doc, all the have other you players. Played, do you ever do miniatures?
I've played a few, nothing recent. The upfront cost has always been too high to get me into miniature war game stuff.
Yeah, same here. I kind of scooted in on, I had a Gaul army. I used to play Ancients as well, which is, we used the DBM rules, which were very tedious sometimes. But somebody was selling their Gaul army, so I managed to scoot in on that. And I played Epic, because it was like a tail end of a sale, and I snagged up, and all I did was play Chaos. And I still have them. I have like a 6,000-point army that I can field right now. Anyone want to take me 6,000 points?
I'm sure at Dragon Con you could find somebody.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, so... I'm pretty heavily invested in the random draw mini stuff that Wizards did, but I've never bothered actually trying to play the miniatures war game that they're also good for. I just use them for my tabletop Friday night games.
We use that. We have a guy in our group, Ron, that actually plays those, and he says the rules are really good.
I keep hearing that. I'm actually considering divesting myself of some of the ones that are very valuable to those people and totally useless to me as a GM. I never need a figure for Tiamat, you know. That's not gonna happen.
Oh, some of those big dragons and stuff.
Oh my god,
for ridiculous.
That one goes for like $50-$75 even.
Oh yeah.
On eBay.
And they're gorgeous, but you know.
Yeah, it's pretty, but
it's one of those things like no game I ever run is anywhere near level to take on a figure like that, you know.
Oh, exactly. We are. I actually let loose a whole world of dragons onto the world we're in.
Yeah, our main group just hit level 4.
Oh, we're like and 17. Then,
yeah. Well, you know, we only can play like maybe once a month.
Oh, really?
Because we're all busy. So, well,
with my group, it's a way, and maybe we could handle this on another podcast, is for us, it's, you know, since we're mostly a little older, we're all in our, you know, late 30s, 40s, it's like that bridge night.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the way ours is, too.
So,
yeah, well, also,
we actually make a point of playing every week, and then once in a while, we'll do like a Saturday thing. And we've kind of moved away from, I remember gaming, we have like several game stores, and this is what I miss, is you can pack up a bunch of small card games, small board games, go to a game store, and you can play all day on a Saturday. And it doesn't matter what you're going to play. You can play a ton, you know, it's like a mini convention for a day. And that kind of has dispersed with the electronic gaming. So we've made a point, you know, as far as, you know, getting together with your friends, that you get caught up with your friends over the week, and it's very social.
Yeah.
As you see that mental health people are now saying that you need to do this with your friends the older you get.
Well, our main problem is that our host is a consultant who works in California on the week.
Oh, wow.
So he's only home on the weekend, so we can only really do it on Saturdays.
Wow.
I would love to have a group that was closer, but we're from like all over town, and being in Atlanta, you know, it's like a 30-minute drive for everybody to get to his house, which is sort of in the middle.
Ours is kind of like here in Jacksonville. I mean, land-wise, we're just as big. Yeah. And it's the same thing. You know, we've got people that live across town, and they'll come right after work. And that seems like the easiest thing to do is play. We play on a Thursday night. So your weekends are free.
Yeah.
And everyone leaves from work. And we play until 10, 10:30. So, you know.
See, we start at like 5 and we go till like 11:30. So we do a longer one.
Oh, we used to do longer ones too. But I remember gaming till 5 in the morning.
So okay, now since we're on the topic, what's everybody's favorite class to play?
Let's
say D&D because that's the only thing I've played so far.
All right.
As far as this goes.
Okay, 4th edition or 3.5?
Okay, I have played 4th edition and that's all. I'm a newbie.
Sorry. 4th edition, right now I'm playing, actually I have two characters. I have a rogue, who's really good. She comes from, I kind of base her off of, I so want to play a Discworld RPG game. I have the books, but
that
nobody
would be really, really fun.
Nobody has read the books for me to go, this will be great. I can run this. I can have fun. This will be awesome. Anyway,
If you're ever here long enough, I will play one with you, Ross.
Okay. her name is Sylvan Fairchild. All of my characters, their last name is Fairchild. Doesn't matter which world they're playing, there will be a Fairchild.
Like Lady Elaine.
Exactly.
From Mr. Rogers.
Exactly. The first one was Ferris. Anyway, she was a magic user. Sylvan is a rogue who went to finishing school, and now she's out in the Outlands. We're playing 4th edition. And then we sort of switch off now between game masters. My friend Kevin's world, I have a dragonborn cleric. Unfortunately not named Ferris or any of the Fairchild. Her name is Mother Vexation. She's actually an abbess.
Okay, I kind of love that name though.
Yeah.
So which do you like better, the cleric or the rogue? Which is more fun for you to play?
Both are fun. The
gun to your head, Rox, pick one.
I've made the cleric sort of schizophrenic, but her accents change from one region to another. So she's, I actually win more points with her. But I do like the rogue.
All right.
So
Doc.
Oh man. I don't know. I've actually just started my second character in 4th edition. The first one was a fighter, and he was a ton of fun. But I'm still getting the feel for the new one. I think I'll ultimately like him better.
Mm-hmm.
But I've only had 2 sessions to get used to him as using the Scion out of the 3rd player's handbook.
Oh, okay.
Like the psychic power people?
Yeah, he's a gnome. So he's 3 feet tall. He doesn't touch anything. He moves things with his mind. That's his.
Okay, that's
His shtick. He dislikes touching things.
Have like an OCD gnome.
Yes, he's pretty much monk. Only he's not quite that crippled. Yeah, he doesn't handle things. He just picks them up with telekinesis and moves them around.
I think that's why I didn't like 4th edition when it first came out. Was they dissed the gnomes.
They did.
That's
part
later.
Of why as soon as the books came out to do it, that was my, as soon as they reintroduced them as a playable race, I knew that was going to be what my second character was going to be.
Gnomes are fun. I had a gnome illusionist for a long time. I liked her. She ran a newspaper too.
Anyway. You know, and that's something that various video game incarnations of D&D or really any fantasy game, other than Warcraft, really, nobody does gnomes.
They leave them out of all the D&D stuff. You don't need anything else, which is
And that's terrible.
That's true, but that's not right. All right, Kim, what is yours? Just real quick.
My main character is actually rogue as well. Which, watch out, everybody. Apparently, we're all sneaky. But and I really like my rogue is built on agility and acrobatics. So I have all of my abilities are like move 2 spaces and stab and then move away again really quick. So that's really fun. I actually played briefly a chaos build sorcerer in a game I was doing for my brother and my sister. I got Tuffly to actually DM it so that I could play too. And that one I only played for 1 session, but it was really fun. So I think if I ever do a different character, I may try that again, because the way it is like, if you get an even or an odd result on your d20 roll, it would change the effects of your spell. But so you have like no armor whatsoever, but you could do incredible amounts of damage if your spell hits just right. So that was kind of fun. But I really do like my rogue, because it's fun to sneak up behind somebody, stab them, and then, you know, do handsprings away and go neener neener.
Yeah, funny, I never play my character that way.
Also,
I have to be reminded of that.
I like to have skills, is the other thing. I like to have a lot of different skills.
That is the one thing, and this is why the GURPS system is great for character building. You could create almost anything, and you have these quirks built in, and if you have a good GM that remembers them, the game could be really awesome. And this is where Ferris came in, and she had like an evil twin. She blackmailed her dad, who was a slaver, so she could have money each month. Anyway, you don't really get a lot of like, you know, other skills in D&D, whereas GURPS, you know, if you want to learn, you know, plumbing, you can.
Well, I think you could if you have somebody running the game who's kind of skilled enough that they can work it all in.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as kind of explicit in the books, I think.
No. And I think that's what I like about
that. That has been something that I've enjoyed getting into in the past year. And also, because here's my big flaw, I have such a weakness for things that have little dedicated bits of stuff. So you would not believe how many dungeon tiles and little plastic diamonds and minis and my dice collection is epic. Chessex booth at Dragon Con. I know you.
She's
well.
She's hitting it first time, first day.
I know, the first day, so they don't sell out of the limited edition Dragon Con dice this year.
But
They're so pretty.
Gnomes have always gotten the short shrift, and they're great illusionists. And they get even a better if you're fighting you know, that ratio of minuses to hit something very small are good. They're in your, if you're playing a gnome, it's in your best interest, you know, to be very small.
And
there,
the various versions of their society and culture have always been entertaining too.
Oh yeah.
They're just,
I had a gnome character in EverQuest, I think. Was it EverQuest where you could play those? One of those games yeah. back in college for a mm-hmm. while. But I have never been able to keep up with games like that because I'll play it a lot for like a month and then I'll just get bored of it. And then eventually I realize I'm paying $10 a month for this and I'm not playing it. And then I cancel my account.
I know. I played EverQuest or Warcraft for a while. And what we would do what we're doing now. We're Skyping. Because my friend moved, and he was the one that we played in his GURPS world forever, and he moved away. So it was a way for us to still game on a Sunday afternoon and get some game time in. And then eventually, my neighbors still play, so every once in a while they'll start talking Warcraft, and I'm like, you know, there wasn't a lot of intrigue in the World of Warcraft games. It's like, okay, build up your skills. Oh, look, you have to go shopping. You have to get these ingredients for Morlocks.
See, that's always
soup.
The part I like. I was so bad in EverQuest because I wanted to be a tailor. So I spent all my time in, like, the halfling starter city going out and killing spiders and getting spider silk and weaving them and making little shirts.
Yeah, but those
so
are
I was, I'd been playing for 6 months and I was, like, level 2.
Made money in the early days of EverQuest. People were able to do that. You know, I remember reading about this one guy that he was an armorer and built up, you know, that people would buy stuff that he was able to, he was one of the first ones to get fantasy property.
Yeah.
That when his marriage broke up, he was able to sell his keep for real money. It was just crazy. That's
oh,
when it's like,
guys,
okay, that's insane.
Did you guys read the article they ran in Wired? It might have been a year or two ago about the Chinese gold farms.
Oh yeah.
That was really interesting. Like, you don't think about, you know, people in, you know, China having some sort of really grueling job, but you don't think of it as being sitting in a big, effectually, you know, call center and playing World of Warcraft all day so that people can sell gold on eBay.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Well, or yeah, and it's sketchy stuff. I've run into them in game a number of times. It's you know, anytime I've put more time in WoW than I should probably cop to.
You're not alone, I am sure.
But you know, in trying to raise enough money to like buy flying mounts or whatever the gold sink of that particular expansion was, you know, you could the player base pretty quickly identified the half dozen spots where
if you're
looking at cash per hour generated, this is where you go just kill everything that moves and loot it. And so I was out there doing that, and if I was on you know, basically had the whole time zone shift, if I was playing it at what would be an odd hour for me and would be prime time for them, then I invariably ran into two or three of them. And they could, and they, some of them were very hostile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would pull tricks to try to drag, you know, drag a whole ton of these monsters down on your head and then disappear and get you stomped until you basically gave up and left.
Yeah.
So they had the place to themselves, and
before it resets, right?
They'll
aggro the hell, and then you're swamped with it, and then
they bail out. So yeah, it's a huge deal. I mean, I play on a fairly moderately populated server. It's not one of the big, huge, old ones, so it doesn't have it quite as bad. It was still pretty steady. It just astounds me, you know, and I've invested in the little security token thing they put out just because the game's so huge, it's a constant target for account theft.
What is that? What is the account thing?
It's a, they send you a, an authenticator that basically when you try to log in, you have to hit a button on the authenticator and it generates a random 6-digit number that you have to enter.
Oh, like for work where you have a VPN?
Yeah. Yeah, wow. It's the same. Yeah, same stuff they use at work.
Is pilfering like that extensive?
Basically, those same operations that do the gold farming, will hack accounts, liquidate them for all the money, and then delete them. You know, delete all the characters. They'll also raid like guild banks. If you're in a guild, they'll use your access to that to empty it out of anything worthwhile. They'll make a ton of money, you know, that they can then sell to somebody who's willing to buy gold. And typically they'll transfer the character off to another server, change its name, and then sell the account itself. So they can sell a max level character for, you know, $100 or whatever. So I don't know how rampant it really is, but the little token costs a whopping $5 in shipping. I never have to worry about it again because I'll go months without playing. I don't ever delete anything. I figure I'll go back when the new expansion comes out or whatever.
Yeah.
So, and that's another thing they tend to do is they wait till somebody looks like they haven't logged in a while, so they know the account's not active, and they'll hack it then, because then they know they've got longer before somebody notices that things have been taken.
Wow.
But yeah, it's fun stuff. We've had a couple in the guild I'm in have been hacked, and I know on the server I play on, our guild has sort of a sister guild on the other side. You know, we've got one on the Horde side and one Alliance side. And both have had their share, and both have now basically said, if you want access to the box of valuable stuff in the guild bank, then you have to have an authenticator on your account.
Wow!
So you can basically turn that on your account, and then you have to use it to log in. So you're getting an extra layer of security. Well,
right.
That's very
and
clever
they've actually
of them to
got
implement
it.
That.
Yeah, they've also got it. I think it's a free iPhone app that does the same thing.
Huh. Wow.
Well, that's clever.
So you've got a couple of options.
So this, just as a curious thing. So how many video game devices do you have in your house right now? And how many of them are in active use?
Ooh. probably only 3 or 4. There are ways to game that whole game store trade-in thing we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
And I gamed my way into one of the new Xbox 360s.
Ooh.
I think my total outlay was $35.
Sweet.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. Now, I would, honestly, a friend of mine has been playing Magic the Gathering on Xbox, and I think that would be that would be a key thing to get for me, but I just haven't, I've got so much other stuff that it's like I'll put a hold on getting an Xbox just yet.
Well, if you get an Xbox, you can be my friend on Xbox Live.
I could be lots of friends on Xbox.
I think we actually, this is terrible, we have probably 7 different platforms.
Wow.
I was thinking right now,
Genesis? And
yes. We have Sega, and we have a Super Nintendo, and we don't play those very often, but we have them, because we don't want to give them up. And then we have a Wii, and a 360, and we have a PlayStation 2. We don't have a PS3 yet, because there's really not been anything that was a killer app for it that made us just have to have it. Like, everything so far that I've really, really wanted to play has been available for Xbox. And then, of course, there's the Xbox 360. And we had the previous generation Xbox as well, but we don't, because most of that stuff you can play on the 360. So, and then I have a DS. And then we have PC and Mac. Although the PCs are all older, so they can only play old stuff. Which, although unlike in previous years, a lot of stuff is coming out for PC and Mac at the same time now, which didn't used to be the case. Now that they're based on Intel chips, it's a lot easier to find stuff. And a lot of them, like Sims 3 came out, and it's just one disc that you can install for either system, which I appreciate quite a bit.
Well, World of Warcraft did the same thing. They jumped on that early. Excuse me. They did that early so that they could get the Mac and PC market.
Yeah, I saw when they they launched Steam. Valve launched their Steam digital storefront on the Mac.
Really, really nice. The nice thing about that is that a lot of those games, if you buy it for one, you can get it for both operating systems. Which
and they,
is
they have said.
So
oh,
smart.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I mean that's just such a smart thing, and it's the kind of thing that you would think people would not do because it would make too much sense, you know.
But they've said. Since it, and it's only been a couple of months since the Steam for Mac came out, but the guy with Valve that sort of oversees that aspect of their business has said basically games that have both platform versions available outsell the others by like 20%.
Oh, I would totally
so they're
it.
They're Valve's getting ready to release their graphics optimization code. For Mac to any of their partner developers that want to use it.
Oh, great.
Trying to speed up the pace of getting more stuff on the Mac side.
I actually rebought all of the Civ 4 expansions because I love Civilization and I had Civ 4 for the PC, but my PC's really old and it just didn't play it very well, but I didn't want to buy it again at the Apple store for, $50 or however much, but Steam had it. Like the original game and all of the expansions plus the colonization game, which is sort of it's a remake of Sid Meier's Colonization, but it's on the Civ 4 engine, so it's like updated graphics and stuff. And I think I got all of those for maybe $30.
Yeah, I did too, actually, when they had their summer sale.
And I've really enjoyed that. And then also the Telltale games, a lot of them are being released like that. So that's the first time some of those you can play on the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm a big Telltale fan, so I've really been enjoying. I think I talked about on Weekend Justice Nelson Tether's Puzzle Agent, that they just released in July, which is a lot of fun. So yeah, I mean, it's a good time. I think it's probably a better time than it has ever been in history to be a gamer and have a Mac.
Oh yeah,
because I mean the displays they have are so nice, and they have these nice big,
especially when you got like a 24
really
inch screen.
Yeah, I mean it looks fantastic. So being able to get it is really a lot of fun.
Well, I saw a little bit of I guess end of the year financial reports, and they said that walking into a game store and buying a game has just eked out ahead of downloading games. I mean, I know that a lot of the older games, my friends and I were talking about Devil Dice on the PlayStation, that you can now download it.
Yeah. Well, and that's another nice thing, is there's a lot of good stuff that comes out on like Xbox Live Arcade, that's relatively inexpensive and, is a good play. Like, what's the one that's like an RPG Bejeweled?
Puzzle
the one I mean? Yeah. Like it's what, $5 or whatever, and you can spend a lot of time playing that and just have a lot of fun, and there's a lot. I mean, a lot of times people who are serious gamers will look down on like the casual game market, but there's a place for that, and there's actually a lot of cleverness that's coming out in these smaller releases. Yeah.
They don't realize the market. The market is huge. When you consider that you could build, any of the little zombie games on the iTouch iPad, I think the guy made like $800,000 in the first year, and he did this in his spare time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these people, the idea is you issue a light version, which is free, to lure the casual gamer,
and if they like it enough,
and they like it, they buy the full version. And the thing is a lot of the hardcore gamers look down on the casual gamers, but we actually have somebody in our play group that was a casual gamer, and that has pushed her into she is a hardcore board gamer. She'll play Settlers of Catan all the time. But they don't realize that, you know, even pushing casual gamers, you know, getting that market going will help get other gamers into, you know, the more heavy duty stuff like, yeah, you know, Halo and stuff.
And also, you know, yeah, sometimes you don't want to play for 10 hours.
No.
Right.
You want to hop on and solve a puzzle in 10 minutes or something before, yes, you have to get ready to go.
Yes.
I mean, one thing I've actually done.
Oh.
No, okay. One thing I've actually done is the... okay, Rox, you go, and then I'll go.
For the electronic gaming, I actually honestly see myself as a casual gamer. A lot of the games I can play, I'll play for an hour, 2 hours at the most, and then I do something else. So I'm not really, you know... So yeah, I have a thing for the casual gamer. So go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, one thing that I actually have done is there's a Big Fish Games is one of the big kind of casual gaming sites, and they pull a lot of stuff together, and they have a game club where you subscribe to it, and it's like you pay $6 a month and you get a credit. And so I don't buy a game every month, but every couple of months I'm like, oh, I haven't bought anything from Big Fish in a while. And I'll go look and get, you know, because all of them have a demo with like an hour of free. So I'll download like 10 things that look like they might be interesting and play around with it and see what I like and get a couple of them. And I found a lot of fun stuff and a lot of stuff for Mac like that, you know, just little variations on little puzzle games or Bejeweled games or Zuma. But also there's also some interesting little adventure games coming out in that space, which that is something like I'm a big, big adventure game, like adventure games and RPGs were my two favorites. And I always loved, you know, I played Monkey Island and all those LucasArts games. I mean, I'm living for the day now that they've started to re-release or update all of those great LucasArts adventure games. I'm just living for the day that somebody brings out a new version of Grim Fandango, because I love that game.
I always have to write up notes whenever I game. It's like, okay, where was I? Damn.
And I mean, it's funny because I, like Doc, am a big one of the, you know, my save game is going to be over 100 hours and I'm going to go do every single little side quest. And I get really annoyed if there's something that I just can't do and it ruins my completion record.
Now,
like Final Fantasy X, that stupid chocobo race, I still am bitter about that. I could never beat it to get whatever the guy's ultimate weapon or whatever it was.
So question for something like that. Do you guys buy the help books just so that you know that there's additional adventures, because a lot of them are hidden?
You can find all that stuff on the internet for free.
Well,
yeah,
okay.
Sometimes I will pony up.
Okay. Occasionally I will. It depends on the game. Some of them, it's like a really nice map or something is worth having. But some of it you can, you know, print stuff out off, you know, game facts or whatever.
Oh, sure.
I mean, like stuff like that. I mean, like I was playing Assassin's Creed 2, which I loved, which surprised me because I didn't think it was going to be my kind of game. But I enjoyed the free running part so much that it really made the game for me. And also, I'm a Renaissance geek, and I really enjoyed the setting. You know, I spent a lot of time like, I'm going to get on this horsey and gallop around Tuscany. Whee! Mike's like, what mission are you on? I'm like, the mission of look how pretty this game is. But you know, there's all these little collection quests, like you have to find 100 eagle feathers and all these different stuff. So for that, I would totally go download a map and print it out and then just check them off when I got them, because otherwise, you know, you'd get lost. But for something like Fallout 3, like that one was a big kind of expanded my horizons, because I always maintained that I was not good at first person 3D games and I did not like shooters.
Mm-hmm.
And Fallout 3 is kind of both of those, but also kind of not. It's really more of an RPG that just has a kind of a shooting mechanic. But I have loved that so much. I think I have like 187 hours on my save file from Fallout right now, and I'm still not done with it. I still have like half of one of the expansion packs and one whole complete other expansion pack to finish. But Fallout New Vegas comes out in October, so I have to finish before then. But, I mean, I've really enjoyed that. And I think one of the things that really gets me in a game is a really unique art design. like a perspective you can really grab onto. And that's one of the things I loved about Grim Fandango, was because Grim Fandango was so unique. You know, because all the characters were, you know, skeletons. It was based on the Day of the Dead and, you know, Mexican folklore. And it had a very kind of Art Deco appeal to it. And it was so different from everything else that you saw. And then Fallout has got the whole, you know, they call it ray gun gothic, the retro futuristic thing where there's robots and it's supposed to be set in the future, but all the styles look like it's the 50s, you know. And so that, I think, for me is a big thing, is if I can really kind of get into some aspect of the art. I mean, that's why Bioshock is so, like, I haven't ever finished it, because I would go in and start playing and my attention would be caught by, like, the posters on the walls or whatever. And while I was wandering around staring at things, somebody would come up and kill me. I need to try it again now that I've been playing Fallout so long, because I might be better at telling when someone's stuck. Because it would be like, "Ooh, look, this is pretty. Ah, I'm dying. Where is it? And then I'd like spin around frantically, and it was not a good show. But so, what are you playing now, or what have you been playing lately? What's caught your attention now? Doc, you want to go first?
Sure. I, after playing through Red Dead Redemption last month, it sort of got me fired up to go back and finally try to get through GTA 4.
Uh-huh.
I had started it 3 or 4 times, and I'd get 4 or 5 hours in, get distracted, and lose interest. But I just finished it up this morning, actually. Finished the last of the sort of main storyline missions in that, and now I've got to go back and do all the little side quests and assassination jobs and that kind of thing. Other than that, I sort of have a handful of things that I'm playing, like multiplayer with some guys on the Xbox. Mm-hmm. Fairly steadily. We're still getting a lot of mileage out of Borderlands, which is a ton of fun with 4 people, but really kind of dull solo.
That's what I've heard. The multiplayer is much better than the single player.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And we're still playing Gears of War 2 from time to time, but basically at this point we're doing it because Gears 3 isn't out yet, and we're all sort of having to scratch that itch while we wait.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it. And then I tinker with Civ 4 a little on Steam, but it's been long enough since I've played a Civilization game that I'm having to kind of relearn how it all works.
Right.
The
thing I loved about Civ 4 was that they had Leonard Nimoy doing voiceovers. Whenever you got a new technology, he read like a little quote, and that always made me happy because I love Leonard Nimoy.
But that's pretty much it for me right now.
All right, Rox, what are you playing now?
Our Thursday night game, I am running Call of Cthulhu. We're using the not the D20 system, but the system before that. Every once in a while, I get up with some other friends, and we've been playing that one zombie board game. Can't think of it right at the moment.
Is that the one with all the little figures that they have, the separate bags of figures that I see in the stores? Okay.
Yeah.
I see the, like, bag of zombies, and I'm like,
No, that's something else. It's like Last Night on Earth, or not based on the movie, but it's really cool. There's so many expansions to it. And lately we've been playing the Arkham horror game. I've actually been able to play that last couple months, and that's been great. Electronic-wise, I actually picked up a really cool little casual game, if you will. It's called Box Battle.
Uh-huh.
And it's by Lightfaint. And it's for... I actually bought the HD version for the iPad. It's like those online games where you're trying to knock down a castle or a keep, but you got a little cannon and you move the cannon, you know, and then you scope out, you know, your trajectory to knock off, you know, little boxes with, you know, some of it have dynamite and stuff. And the aesthetics of it, it's all steampunk. So a lot
people
gaming wise, they've really latched onto that look because
I think BioShock probably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Probably kicked that off.
That would be a game. Yeah, that would be a game I'd play too because I like the look
of beautiful.
You know, the Big Daddy, and that's
it's
one with
so
Big
pretty.
Daddy, right? Yeah.
Although I've heard, I haven't played BioShock 2, but I've heard it's kind of disappointing because you play as a Big Daddy.
Yeah.
And they're like, after going through the first game, and the Big Daddy was like, "Oh, here comes my giant death." Then
right.
you play it, and you're not very strong, and it's just kind of
right.
like, "Wait, this is kind of a chip." What?
But the cool thing, and Will Wheaton brought this up, that one of the reasons he liked the idea of the iPad is it's a you could use it as a board game system.
You know, I've heard that the Scrabble, you can use
yes.
it, and then on a touch, you can have your tiles.
Yes, and
which is pretty clever.
I've been playing Carcassonne, which has
uh-huh.
been a game, a board game that's been around forever.
Yeah, I've seen that around.
It's a ton of fun.
They have it on Xbox Live Arcade. I think they have a version too.
Yes,
they do. And about three of the expansions.
Yes. So I'm waiting for Settlers of Catan for the iPad. So that's what I'm playing right now.
Well, I'm a simultaneous gamer. I usually have something going on a couple different platforms depending on what I'm in the mood for. But right now on the computer, I've been playing Nelson Tether's Puzzle Agent. Which I think I've talked about this a lot, but it's similar to the Professor Layton games where there's kind of a sort of an overarching plot, and then you solve mystery little puzzles, basically logic puzzles or mazes or things like that throughout. But it's got a really fun style, very unique style. And I've been enjoying that. That's from Telltale. And then on the Xbox, I've been finally playing Final Fantasy 13, which I basically wait until what we usually do is actually get it on Gamefly.
Oh.
And then if we like it, by the time we wait until it's cheap.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a thing on Gamefly where with a lot of the games you can keep it. You can just go on and say, "Hey, I want to keep this," and they'll charge your account, $30 or whatever, and you get to keep it and they'll mail you the case. So, playing Final Fantasy 13, which is interesting.
In a good way.
I have said that Final Fantasy is like the Law and Order of video games.
Yeah.
it's always pretty much the same, and it has the same elements. And, regardless of the plot dressings, there's really not that much different about it. But that's kind of why you like it. it's comforting. You know that by the 30-minute mark, they're going to arrest somebody.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You know that the detective is always going to take it personally. And you know that Sam Waterston is very, very angry. And it's the same way with Final Fantasy. There's the same character archetypes, the same basic plot. If there's somebody named Sid anything, they're always going to give you an airship.
Mm.
There's just these basic stuff. So on the one hand, it's a Final Fantasy game, and it's very kind of similar. But on the other hand, there's a lot that's different about this one, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. It's very, very, very linear.
Do you ever play the Kingdom Hearts games? Have you gone through that?
Oh, my gosh. I hate Kingdom Hearts.
Really?
Oh,
my goodness.
Wow.
I tried to play the first Kingdom Hearts, I think, on the PS2.
Yeah.
And all I can remember is my absolute consuming rage trying to beat the boss of the Alice in Wonderland level.
Oh.
Because who is it, Donald and Goofy or something that you have
yeah.
in the party?
Yes.
They kept running out of cover and getting killed and making me die. The AI on those was not very good, I think. And I remember just being so mad at stupid Donald Duck that he could not just stay behind the freaking teacup and let me take care of it.
Do you know, I liked the Kingdom Hearts game for the DS. I liked that system where you had a series of cards and you came up with your own series of moves and stuff. I liked that a lot. I actually bought the 365-day one. And, mm-hmm. and I'm not having as much fun with that one as I did the earlier Kingdom
was
Hearts.
Was the Chain of Memories, or was that the early one?
Yeah.
Okay.
I remember, I think Final Fantasy VIII, there was a card game that was like this kind of a subquest or something that you could play this card game. And I played that So I really enjoyed that one. I remember you used to spend all this time just going around playing cards with people within the game. And the thing about Final Fantasy is usually there's always a point at the game where you're opened up to the whole world. You can go wherever you want to, and there's a ton of side quests. And this one just isn't that way. I have literally spent 40 hours walking in a straight line with occasionally there's a little branch on the map, and you go down the branch and there's a treasure at the end. But I kid you not, every single level, it's either on a train track, like literally on a train track, talk about being on rails, or it's in a tunnel, or it's in a maze, or it's in the bottom of a gorge. I mean, there's literally only one way that you can go. And if there's another way you can go briefly, it's only a short distance, and there's like a treasure at the end of that bit. It is the most linear game I think I've ever played that was like, it's just astounding. And having immediately before I started playing this, I was playing a lot of Fallout. So it's like cognitive dissonance has really set it. And I go, I'm like, wow, where do I go next? Well, no big question there, you know. But you just keep going and going and going and going. And so there's 13 chapters in the game. I'm on chapter 11, and that's the first time in the game where you have anything resembling a world map. You go out onto basically a big plain, and there's a big kind of open space where you can wander around and do what is apparently the only side quest chain in the game, which is there's these different stones, and you go touch them, and they give you a mission to go kill a certain enemy or group of enemies, and you go do it, and you get a reward. And then you're at the next one. But it doesn't make it unfun, but it's so weird for a Final Fantasy game to be that linear. Like, I think there's not going to be near as much of replay value on this one as there are on some of the others. I mean, I had a huge, huge save file, well over 100 hours on, like, Final Fantasy X.
Oh, yeah.
I remember, like, all those different side quests, and I mean, I was going nuts with trying to get everything. I even did that stupid one for what's her name's ultimate weapon, where you have to count the lightning flashes and hit the button right after it.
Oh wow!
I mean,
that
I was
a pain.
I was hardcore. I was gonna get it all. I was gonna do all the stuff, and then I couldn't win the stupid chocobo race, so I had to give up on that. And I think I gave up in a huff and never played again. I'm like, I counted 100 lightning flashes, and I am being brought low by a chocobo. I hate those chocobos.
We'll make you a shirt for Dragon. I hate chocobos.
Like, and a little
a headless chocobo.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That still kind of bothers me even now. But I mean, always there they would have, you know, some sort of a game. Like, there was the thing where you played ball in Final Fantasy X, or the card game, or, you know, and there'd be all the different. Go collect the weapons, go do this, go do that. In Final Fantasy 13, there's not even towns. You can't even talk to people. Like, you do all your shopping, I kid you not, on eBay. I mean, it doesn't call it eBay, but you actually pick up little cards when you win certain battles that give you access to stores, and the save points look like a MacBook or something, and it opens up this little menu where you can go shop online to buy things. So there aren't even shopkeepers.
Well,
it's
what
really
is their,
kind of lonely.
Well, what is their thinking on making such a linear game? I mean, are they afraid of, you know, the current market the way it is?
I don't know.
I mean, it is their standby game.
I wonder if part of it might be that they spent so much space on the graphics.
Oh.
I mean, it's three DVDs.
Oh.
I mean,
wow.
And don't get me wrong, the graphics are beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
but
it's
if you don't have a
impressive looking game,
what good is it?
So yeah, but it's just, you know, look at these beautiful cutscenes, and I'm like, okay, yeah, they're pretty, but you know, when can I go back to running down the corridor? I mean, you'd think it was Doctor Who. so yeah, but so that's kind of interesting. It's so, it's like I have a lot of kind of beefs with the game, but that still doesn't make it not fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it doesn't live up to the potential I think it could have, because normally Final Fantasy is a game that you can just play and play and play, but this one, I think once I make it to the end of the main quest line, I'm going to be done with it.
Oh, okay.
You know, which is unusual for me, because I'm usually the one who wants to go play everything, and oh my goodness, when I started playing Xbox and they had achievements, I was done for, because the lengths I will go to. I still remember I was playing, and this is so stupid, I was playing Lego Indiana Jones, And there was this one, like, treasure I couldn't get. And I literally spent, like, an hour swinging back and forth across a vine, trying to time it right, you know, so that I could... Oh, no, it was the one where you have to... The little stone pillars are turning, and you have to time your jumps just right to get across.
Yep.
Yeah, that one took a long time, but I had everything else except for that one, and I really wanted to get 100%, because I don't usually make it to 100% completion on all my games, especially the ones like Fallout, where there's like three different achievements, and one of them is like, you have positive karma, you have negative karma, you have neutral karma, and I'm like, I'm not going to play this thing three times with three different, you know, karmic alignments to try to get it. And I know there's cheats where you like try to stay neutral, and then you like go give a bunch of money to the poor and save so that you get the good one, and then you go like kick a bunch of puppies and save so you have the evil one, but I'm not quite that obsessive about it at this point.
Yeah, I tragically pretty much am, so
I don't think I haven't thought about it, but I have so far resisted the urge, also because I am like incapable of playing as an evil character even when I try to.
Oh, Kim, it's easy.
I just can't.
It really is.
Like, I'll even go, I'm like, okay, this is going to be a bad character. And then whenever it gets to the thing, and I'm like, but I don't want to kick the puppy. It would make the little boy sad.
It's, for me, it's always, you know, when you're trying to play the good guy, there's always something about the NPCs or the quests or whatever that's just infuriating and stupid, but you go and do it anyway. Because that's what the story wants you to do. Just evil is not so much I'm going to go kick puppies. It's I'm going to do what my first inclination was when I had to do this last time, mm-hmm. which is shoot you rather than try to make a deal.
Yeah.
Or all these people in town want me to do this pointless crap. I know I'm going to set the nuke off and never have to listen to any of them again. So.
And then you get a better apartment if you do that.
Exactly. Exactly.
You get better day.
That's
so yeah,
you just
have to indulge your cranky player and not so much your urge to be evil.
You know, and I think in some games it's easier than others because, for instance, Peter Molyneux has it's so funny because he thinks that he's like the grand be-all and end-all of moral choice in video games.
Oh, Jesus.
But the moral choices in his video games are always so ridiculously, like, I mean, it's really seriously like, are you going to kick your puppy or are you going to feed it a treat? You know, it's really, really, really not subtle.
They're tests. They'll feed it into some giant computer somewhere to see on how evil people really are.
You know, and he always goes and gives all of these completely obnoxious interviews about how, you know, he's doing all this groundbreaking work with moral choice in video gaming. When if you look at some of the other things like the Mass Effect games or if you look at
cooperative
Fallout or anything like that, there's so much more nuance there. Like I remember one of the Fallout expansions, Doc, have you played The Pit?
Yes.
That
one's complicated.
Yes, there's a point in there was literally a point in that game when I sat there for 10 minutes trying to figure out what I was going to do.
Yeah, neither option ended up being that appealing.
Yeah, I'm like, there is really no good choice here. You know, it's like, do you, you know, the person you thought was the good person maybe isn't, and the person you thought was the bad person maybe isn't, but maybe they really are. Who do you believe? Nobody's really reliable. You know, and that one literally, I literally thought about that for a long time after it. I'm like, man, I wonder if that was the right thing to do. Which, that's the kind of stuff that Peter Molyneux thinks he's doing and just really totally isn't.
Yeah, somebody needs to put a muzzle or a leash on him and just not let him out to do these interviews.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is his games wouldn't be so disappointing if he didn't hype them up so much beforehand.
That's a huge part of it. I see coming out of E3, saw some of the stuff on Fable 3.
Yeah.
And Fable 2 is another one that's sort of been in my stack like GTA 4 was. Where I can't maintain interest long enough. Like GTA, I finally got past the slow part and really got into the meat of the story. But there's no story in Fable 2.
Yeah. Oh,
my
goodness.
I mean, it's the thinnest excuse for an adventure game that anybody's ever cooked up. It's, you know, you have to save the kingdom from an evil ruler. Ooh, you know, never done that. Thanks, Peter.
that's exciting and new.
But there's
and
moral.
It boils down
thing
to, like... But there's a whopping, like, if you just run from one to the other, there's literally only like six quests.
Oh yeah,
and it's over. You know,
there's not
it takes
that much.
Very little time. So if mm-hmm. you're not interested in all the goofy little, like, oh, I'm gonna buy property, I'm gonna have multiple wives, yeah. you know, just dumb shit that he put in, so that it has this illusion of some sort of freedom of choice.
My Fable 2 character may have had six husbands.
Wow.
Yeah, I lost track. It was because
she's
it was
a busy
just a
girl,
stupid...
regardless.
And it's such a stupidly easy system to game.
It is.
You know, in terms
the trouble
of the,
is,
yeah, you know, they made this big deal about how the relationships
the
with NPCs
and
it's all so
yeah.
complex.
It's
and
not.
All you have to do to get everybody to love you is go stand in the middle of a bunch of them and dance
yeah.
for 10 minutes, and everybody wants to marry you and thinks you're the greatest thing since sliced bread.
And, yeah, I did actually enjoy the property part at first, but there gets a point where you're making so ridiculously much money that it completely breaks any sort of economic stuff you might want to do. Like, you're literally getting just billions of dollars every 10 minutes.
Well, that's like that cheat in, like, if you think about Sims, that's, you know, if you get the money, the cheat for the money.
Except for this isn't even cheating. It's the way the game is actually designed. So you
the
don't
system's
even feel like
totally
it's
broken. Because if you play the tie-in game that they put out for Fable 2, you can actually start the game with some of the best equipment you're ever going to find.
Yeah.
At which point you don't need money for anything, unless you want to buy presents for all the various NPCs. So it can all go into buying property, you know, and you say once you get a few under your belts, it's pretty much the in-game economy is busted, and that whole aspect of challenge is gone. You don't ever have to make decisions. You can just buy everything. Especially if you buy potions that give you XP. So, I don't know. I'll finish it at some point, but it's not easy.
Doc, I'm hearing a lot of noise.
I know I've got an electrical storm coming my way.
I wonder.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
You're hearing that?
Yeah. It's kind of cool, though.
You're an electric robot.
Ooh, it's Master Controller.
Okay, well, yeah, and the other thing with Fable is there was a point where I would actually, you know, try to get kind of fond of the little family I would have or whatever, and I would try to interact with them, but you can't, you know, hug them or talk to them or do anything except for the stupid little emotions. So it's like, I love you, watch me fart, you know, or now I'm going to do a funny puppet dance. And it was really... It's like he was trying to put a simulation game in there and got just enough to make you expect there to be some actual functionality, and then there was nothing there. It was so thin. I mean, it had its moments, and there was some good voice talent in it. I mean, Stephen Fry was in it, which is always nice, but it was not worthy of the level of talent that it had in its voice cast, I think.
Right.
No, I don't think so either.
So... One more thing before we go. What upcoming release or gaming event are you most looking forward to this year? Something you saw at E3 or that you know is coming out?
Probably New Vegas for me.
Yeah. I'm very much looking forward to New Vegas as well. I'm also looking forward to Civ 5 because I would like to see how they update that. And also Hexes now instead of Squares, which... It's kind of a fun twist, which will give you a little bit more flexibility with some of your city allocations and that. But it's also going to be coming out on Steam, which means I'll be able to get it straight away from my Mac, which is exciting. New Vegas is really the biggest one.
Yeah, the rest of the things I was looking forward to have all been punted into 2011,
or
late 2011.
I mean, I am very much looking forward to Mass Effect 3, but that's going to be a couple years before they get that one out. That series was very impressive, I thought, the first two Mass Effect games. I think that's one of the times that I've actually felt like I was really involved with the story in a game. You know, I felt almost like I was watching a movie and also writing it at the same time. I was very much enjoyed that. And also talking about voice cast, Mass Effect and Mass Effect 2 had some amazing voice acting, both people that are famous and also people that you've, you know, not necessarily heard of, but just did a wonderful job.
Yeah, it had some excellent stuff. The Dragon Age cast was pretty good too, for mm-hmm. the same reason.
Yeah, I love the Solarian scientist who works in your lab. There's actually a point where if you follow the dialogue tree right, you can get him to sing a Gilbert and Sullivan pastiche. I stumbled upon it entirely by surprise and didn't realize it was there. And I just literally sat there and laughing for like 10 minutes. I was like, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, completely dramatic camera angles and everything.
Oh yeah, it was wonderful. And it's just all these little character. And then I really found myself getting attached to the characters. And so, you know, when you would see characters from the first game, I'd be really happy to see them. Which is, you know, it's something, because a lot of times games, it's hard for them to develop a character that much so that you actually do feel attached to it. But it can be done.
The thing I'm looking ahead for, Kim, and you might like this. This might be good. GURPS is coming out with their supplement of Middle Ages 1.
Oh, so interesting.
The nice thing about the Steve Jackson games, especially the supplements, they're an easy way of actually getting information from a certain time period or a certain genre. I have a library full of GURPS ones. But the Middle Ages one, it'll cover chivalry.
Hello?
Mainly the three periods that they're covering is the Saxon kingdoms, Norman England, and High Middle Ages. It'll cover medieval combat too, because most of the times when you're gaming, and you kind of sort of say, yeah, this is the time period that you're kind of gaming, even in fantasy. Right. Everybody gets it wrong. So that's the to look out for. It's supposed to have been out July 15th, so we just lost a game store in my area. So
alas.
I'll have to probably pick I'll have to pick up one at Budmont or something. So like several places. All right. That's what I'm looking for.
Okay. Well, I think we have an electrical storm coming through, so in the interest of getting everybody done before we lose all our feeds, I think that's about it for today. Thank you everybody for joining, and we will have to do this again.
Yes.
Very much well.
So. Oh no! You have walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru.
This is Kim from needcoffee.com. You've been listening to the needcoffee.com podcast, The Gru Cafe. If you enjoyed The Gru Cafe and would like to hear more, you can make that happen by doing one, or even better, all of the following. Number one, tell a friend about us. Number two, go to iTunes and write a review of needcoffee.com podcasts. Number three, become a member of needcoffee.com. Our goal is to become the world's first 100% reader-supported website named needcoffee.com. For more information, please go to needcoffee.com/membership. Thanks for listening. This was fun, you guys.
It was.
Yeah, this
I always
was good.
I always enjoy having a chance to geek out with people who don't look at me funny. Or at least when they do it with love.